Hey everyone, Alex here. Let me tell you about USERP. That's USERP.io. If you're a growth stage or public company and SEO isn't driving enough pipeline for you yet, or maybe you've hit a growth bottleneck, you need to talk to this crew. USERP has spent 10 years helping some of the biggest SaaS, fintech, and healthcare brands in the world turn organic search into a legitimate customer acquisition engine. And now they're doing the same for AI search. We're talking companies like Monday.com, Robinhood, CrowdStrike, Wiz, Binance, and dozens more that you've heard of, from Series A all the way to publicly traded. And the results speak for themselves. They helped Monday.com go from 600,000 to 1.2 million organic visits leading into their IPO. They built hundreds of high-authority links and content assets for Earlybird, a fintech app, driving over 20,000 acquired users before Earlybird was acquired by Acorns. And they've helped Onboard rank for 13,000 more keywords in their space, tripling their organic pipeline value in a single year. What makes USERP different is they don't just publish content and hope for the best. They engineer content assets that rank and convert, backed by links on sites like HubSpot, Gartner, and G2. Here's the deal for Superpath. Mention Superpath when you book your strategy call at userp.io, and they'll add 5 bonus high authority link placements to your first month on top of your package. That's userp.io.
Ronnie Higgins thinks B2B content needs to do more than just educate and inform your audience. He's here to talk with us about his latest piece for the collective content blog, The Art of Content, titled Seeking B2B Content with Range. Ronnie, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. I'm so obsessed with the way that you think about content. I think we need to be having these kinds of conversations a lot more in the content marketing world. So I'm just so glad that you are on the Superpath podcast with us.
I'm going to turn it back to you. First, congrats on Art of Content. When you first approached me with the idea late last year, 2025, I was like, this is going to be awesome. It's something that I wanted to do, tried maybe half-heartedly to do. And I was like, if there's anybody who's going to execute this well, it's going to be you. And so far, the response to like everybody, all the contributing posts has been just phenomenal. And so congrats on that.
Thank you. It's been so awesome.
Thanks for inviting me to be part of it, because that was the first piece that I had written about work or like content marketing business in over a year, because I kind of felt like the juice wasn't worth the squeeze anymore. And I needed some time to just focus on, you know, practicing everything that I preach.
Yeah, totally.
So it was nice to kind of, it was cathartic to be able to like share things. And just the response that we've gotten so far has been more than I could have asked for.
It's so awesome to see. I love seeing your ideas out in the wild. So let's jump into it. We'll start with the rapid fire questions about you. Are you in-house, agency, freelance?
Currently in-house. I'm an IC after 7-ish years of leading teams, mainly because I wanted to get, you know, more intimate with the work, get my hands dirty. And so I'm at a company called Fresh Paint. We're a CDP for healthcare marketers, allowing them to do what all the other marketers do without breaking all of the different privacy laws and regulations.
Nice. And what's your favorite part of the job?
Right now I'm working on Fresh Paint's first podcast, and you know, maybe we'll get into it later, but I have put a lot of work into what seems like your status quo of talking heads, talking shop podcasts. And my favorite part of the job is not when the metrics come in and the podcast gets, you know, told like, oh, someone who just had a, you know, became a customer or mentioned the podcast. It's actually the like even more nuanced qualitative data. Recently had a guest who is really amazing marketer who like has done like Super Bowl commercials. And he responded to an email from our host and CEO, Ray Minna, saying, you know, this is probably the first podcast I'm ever in my career going to be sharing with my personal network. Like, had a really great time, loved everything that we talked about. And I think that's because like that's what really shows like the hard work that we put into our content.
That's awesome. What would you be doing if you weren't in content?
So an academic who's constantly learning and passing on his knowledge is where I would be if I weren't doing this job.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited for you to pass on some knowledge for us today. So let's seg into talking about your piece. Can we open by just, can you describe like the thesis of the piece that you wrote in a sentence or two?
Yeah. So like it says on the tin, you know, seeking B2B content with range is that in my career, 17-ish years of doing content, the one thing that's happened, like one of the worst things that's happened to content is it being seen as a means to an end. It just needs to be information. And I think a lot of this had to do with SEO.
Okay.
You know, SEO had like, oh, there are different types of keyword, informational, navigational, commercial, transactional. And it was like, you know, that those are true, but we're humans.
Yeah.
When we're trying to find something, I mean, have you ever been lost somewhere? What is the feeling of being lost?
Mm.
And so I know this is not in one sentence, but B2B seeking content with range, or seeking B2B content with range, is about, it's a calling, a call to action for B2B content marketers to think about their content in the most human of terms, which are all of the needs that we have. We don't do anything without motivation, and that goes for content and consuming it.
Yeah, I love how you put that, of thinking about it in the most human way possible, which is about thinking about our needs and what actually motivates us to do things. I thought it was so interesting that you opened your piece talking about BuzzFeed, which you rightly call out is kind of a random, feels like unrelated to B2B at all. But they have kind of come up, or they had come up with this cultural cartography map. Can you talk a bit, just in case, like for people who haven't read the piece or aren't familiar with this idea, what is this kind of cultural cartography idea? What role does it play for B2B? How does it fit in with those human needs that you're mentioning?
Yeah, so I'm going to tell a little bit on a personal story of how I learned about it. So I was lucky enough to have met Matt Honan, who at the time, this is 2017, 2018, was the San Francisco bureau chief of BuzzFeed. And I had messaged him at the time. For me, I was overseeing just about to oversee the global content operation for Eventbrite and help it scale globally. And I had reached out to Matt to say, can I buy you lunch to just ask you questions about BuzzFeed? And, you know, at the time, BuzzFeed was still doing great. I think we can go into why they aren't, but I just wanted to understand, like, what were they doing? I was trying to look at for ideas outside of B2B content marketing that I could adopt. And had lunch with them, learned a lot about how they use, like, machine learning to determine, same way like Netflix determines like a thumbnail for a movie, like they were doing for intros and titles and stuff like that. And that's when I then learned about all of the data science. So the data science team then had analyzed tens of thousands of comments related to different articles because they wanted to understand virality. And what they ended up doing was, because they were also people who worked with product orgs, had realized that they could apply product job to be done to content to understand not just like what people share, but why they share it. And so the BuzzFeed cultural cartography, for those listening, if you Google it, it surprisingly hasn't been like covered a lot. You would have think this thing would be like out there as often as like Pixar storytelling rules.
Yeah, I feel like everyone's trying to understand how to go viral.
Yeah, and so it's this like scatter lot of different jobs that they identified that essentially fall into a few different groups, like humor, make me laugh, identity, this is me, connection, this is us, or this makes me feel closer to my people, utility, like this was like helpful, and then emotion, like this made me feel something, this made me cry. And so it's like a little scatter plot, and it's based on all this like data science modeling that they had done in like 2015, 2016. It actually goes along with something that I didn't talk about in that piece called Pound, which is they actually did distribution cartography, which is like understanding, like, you know, back in the days when you would see like, oh, we got like 20 shares on Facebook, 10 on Twitter. They actually could map out like how the likes from one ended up from another and see how things spread. And so this was in tandem with that to be able to help people at BuzzFeed think differently about how they were approaching content. So instead of thinking of the utility of it, of like, oh, let's do, for all intents and purposes, a brownie recipe, they would think, okay, you know, let's actually do an article on, you know, desserts to make for a friend's get together or something like that. And then it's like, okay, brownie recipe. Because they realized like that was why people seek out content, why people consume it. That's why people share it. It's like, what was the job to be done? And that goes back to like how products think. I'm going on here, but yeah, that's essentially what the BuzzFeed cultural cartography is.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I think this idea that you're pulling out in your piece too about like hiring content to do a job or thinking about content as a product, it kind of goes back to this idea of what BuzzFeed was trying to do, which is go a step beyond what the topic of the content is into why are people looking for this content. And I feel like we talk about that with SEO and like you alluded to earlier with like, oh, is this informational? Is it transactional? But I feel like this is really taking it a step deeper. I don't know if it's the human emotion piece or if there's some other aspect to it, but it just feels like a much richer way to think about that.
So there's two ways to think about the why. Mm-hmm. One of the ways is that, you know, everybody talks about like, especially today, content has to have a POV. Well, information is like a commodity, especially today. And so what's your point of view on it? Mm-hmm. Well, to understand your point of view, you need to read the room. You need to know like, oh, this is, you know, how people think about it. And because people aren't just wanting to know, even though what is blank, you know, cloud computing or whatever, I don't know, has an emotional and social need behind it. It's when someone is searching for something online or they see something pop up in a newsletter in their inbox, they have a need. They have something that goes beyond just the information. They are frustrated because they've been trying to solve a problem for so long, or they've tried 10, 15, 20 different things and nothing's worked out the way they want. And so when you think about the jobs to be done, it's like, yes, they want to do X so they can do Z. Mm-hmm. But there's like, if you think about the human behind there, they want to be seen, felt, heard. It's almost like, you know, being a therapist. Like, what is it that they want and need? And making sure that you meet them in that moment. Because you never know if like that first intro, instead of it being like, most content marketers don't do this, but they should be doing this other thing. I have bad examples. I'm sorry. But, but you know what I'm saying? Like when you start off with that, that's not helpful. You want to be able to say like, all right, you know, you've tried a bunch of things. You're here. Let's get down to business. Or you want to make sure that where they're at, they're with you. The other way to think about it is we're going to talk later about how I apply it, but I try to treat the reader or listener or whatever, the audience, as a protagonist.
Okay.
Everybody in this field knows storytelling, knows what a protagonist is, the main character. And what defines a main character in a story? They want something. And what is it that they want?
Yeah.
And if you know what they want, you realize like it's not just information, it's information for a reason. What are they going to do with that information? What is that information going to do? Because like I talked earlier about the social reasons. It might be like, I want to look smart in front of my team. Mm-hmm. My boss told me to figure out AI and I don't know shit about it. So I want to be able to go back and look like an expert. There's a social reason. They need a promotion. I should have told you about this ahead of time, but Bain & Company, the people that did and came up with NPS score, they have in both B2C and B2B a pyramid of value props.
Okay.
That the values that a B2B product or service can have. And like, you know, the bottom of that pyramid is the things that most marketing you know, product marketers would like tackle, ease of use, this and that. But when you go further up the pyramid, you get to these jobs to be done. You have someone who, you know, because no one's going to get, it's that whole, no one gets fired for buying IBM.
Yeah, right.
Like that, whether it's true or not anymore, is about the fact that there's anxiety of choosing a B2B service or product. No one wants to be the person that vouched for a product that ended up costing 20 times more, blew the budget, and didn't do anything.
Right. And I think, like, what I think you're getting at, or what I hear you getting at, is this idea that we have kind of overemphasized this need for information while underemphasizing, like, all of the human emotions that underlie that need.
Yes.
Which is just so interesting. And I think your idea of thinking about the reader or your audience as a protagonist is a really interesting way to shift that, because another piece of having a protagonist is like there's a transformation, right? Like you can't have a book where your main character, nothing happens to them. You know, like there's no Lord of the Rings where the hobbits just hang out in the Shire and have a little picnic, right? Lord of the Rings, they have to go to Mordor and like get through the fire and hold on to the ring and find the tree. You know, like there's all of these pieces of things they have to go through that complete this transformation. And
100%.
I feel like what I'm hearing you say is like, we actually need to be doing this in our B2B content as well.
Yeah. And I don't mean overdoing it. I don't mean like not shipping anything because you haven't figured this out or you think you overthink it.
That's a good clarification.
Like, you know, there's the whole, I don't see it often, thankfully, but there's this like, so every now and then on LinkedIn, like, I don't hire artists, I hire blah, blah, blah. Like, no one wants to like they try to like say like in B2B there it's business, right? And it's like, yes.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that.
So yes and no, but there's still that side of it is has value. And I just want to make sure that I put a stake in the ground that says like, I don't mean to throw away the information. It's still all rooted in how do you influence customer behavior? How do you make them feel something? Because this isn't a piece in BuzzFeed. This isn't, you know, which princess are you pop, you know, quiz. This is like something that's supposed to actually influence people's decision-making when it comes to buying products. But there's value in thinking about what is not just the informational needs that get them to choose your product, but what are the emotional, social, temporal, spatial, if there's like a place you need to be, like what are all those different needs?
Maybe I'll just like play devil's advocate for a minute though and say like, does it really matter if we, you know, like most brands are already ignoring these emotional states and doing just fine. So like, doesn't it seem like the most important job in B2B is to inform and educate? And then like, the flip side of that is like, do buyers really want to be like entertained or comforted or like their anxiety lessened by the brands that they're buying from? Like, is that really the role? Or
it's definitely the primary role, but it also depends on where the buyer is. So this is, so Field and Bennett, these two guys did marketing research back in 2019.
Okay.
This combined with like a lot of, it was like what's the word? Empirical type research, not just like, oh, we interviewed 200 people. And that it's them and, because it's like same time that I discovered the cultural cartography. So like 2019, it was them. And then it was, oh, why am I blanking on it? The Enberg Bass Institute came up with the 95-5 rule for B2B. Which is for any given, on average, any given B2B customer buyer, 95% of them are not in market. They are not ready to buy. They're never going to buy. Only 5% of them are. But when someone from the 95%, when they do become part of that 5%, they already have a list of a day one list, which is on average like 3 brand names already chosen. And so this goes back to, so that's the Ehrenberg Bass Institute research, back to Field and Bennett. What they had discovered was that emotional campaigns are, I'm going to make sure I don't botch this, but it's 17 times more effective driving long-term profitable growth compared to rational campaigns. So they were studying ads, the creative of ads. So like, take this with like, you have to transfer this to content.
Sure.
It goes back to the idea that it depends on where they are. Okay. If someone is product aware, they understand the product, they now need to go rationalize it to their CFO. Yes, you don't want to be freaking cutesy. You don't want to beat around the bush. You want to get down to brass tacks. How much is this going to cost? Give me a cheat sheet of stats of, this is where like case studies come into play.
Yeah, the hard, cold numbers.
Yeah, but earlier in that 95%, how do people remember you?
Mm-hmm.
How do people put you on that list? So when the boss says, hey, figure out AI, you already have like three things on your list, is because they built some emotional connection to you. And that emotional connection can be inspirational, can be, it's just about building memory. And to build memory, you need to tap into something that's more than just purely informational. Earlier you asked too about like, do people want to be entertained? Mm-hmm. This is going to become even more important because there's another research from Reuters, I think, that very recent, like maybe a few weeks ago. So before I even published, or after I published that piece, that talked about how younger people like 18 to 24 today are, what's their relationship to news and media? And what they found was that younger audience want their news to come in a entertainment sort of container.
Okay.
That's why they like watching, you know, news talk.
They just like watch SNL's recaps for their news.
Yeah. And, you know, then they pick up on the smaller signals, but they're not tuning into their local news the way like maybe even we did at some point, or definitely our parents and grandparents and great grandparents did in terms of TV and radio or even the newspaper. They want to, they, and this is all about how they keep in touch. So if you think about back to that 95% of the people who aren't ready to buy, you need to find ways to keep the brand relevant and top of mind. This going back to like not screwing around, you still need to choose the like topics and the emotions and the social needs that are relevant to your product so that people know what it is you do and not just like, oh, I know of them. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, there's a number of brands, I won't name them, but I like see their marketing all the time, or I see them put out some interesting thing and I might think like, oh, that's a cool brand, but I don't know anything about what they do or what their product is aside from, you know, they made that one cool thing that I thought was kind of interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right to say it obviously has to be tied together. At the same time, I do think it's interesting the way you're kind of dividing this 5% that's ready to buy versus the 95% that's not ready to buy. Information might be like a lot lower on their list of needs. Whereas when I hear people talk about like tofu content for people who aren't yet ready to buy, it's almost always that means like informational content. You know, that's like the high funnel SEO articles. Let's answer a question that people Google.
Exactly. A good example of this, like even further up the funnel, right, is even in the most driest professional, like what, like idea of content that's not trying to be some retelling of Lord of the Rings.
Sure.
At a handful of places, what I've done is gather practitioners to talk shop. So typical B2B podcast tries to do this, but they focus too much on getting a name or a guest and not so much about what the value of the material will be. But at Dovetail, when I advised them, I had realized like if they wanted to crack the top of the funnel, they couldn't do SEO. They couldn't do what is and all of the like low hanging fruit back at, it was like 2020.
Okay.
So midst of the pandemic. And it was because they're a research platform, a repository. And what I realized is that the people that would be using their product, the like people that were going to get them to be the early adopters, because they were a Series A going at the time, just getting there from seed to Series A, they needed to get their early adopters, and then they needed the people who were going to help them cross the chasm. And if you can go Google that later, so I don't have to explain what crossing the chasm is, but it's the whole like getting that first stage of growth. And I told them what you need to do is you need to get practitioners to tell their war stories, explain, go into get nerd out. And that's your top of the funnel. Mm-hmm. And it worked for them, because what they did is they ended up building this entire publication that was like a journal, essentially, a scientific journal for academic and product researchers.
That's awesome.
So to show you, it's like, it's still a business, you know, thing.
Yep. It just
fulfilled the need. It helped them express. You know, I had them dig in, like, it's not just we did this, then that. It's like, no, where's the tension? Where did they get try something and it freaking mm-hmm. fail? How did they get the buy-in? Like, what were all the social problems they had to overcome to do what they needed to do?
And, like, what would you say was the psychological need that was being fulfilled by that content for the audience? Was it like, oh, this is us, I feel connected? Or was it like, other people are experiencing this, so thus I feel less anxious now? Or how would you kind of describe that in those terms?
Empower me, like provide like the tools, the knowledge, like what there's no like, especially during the pandemic, the reason that that idea worked was nobody was gathering in person.
Yeah.
And if you think about those in person, like when those people would go to conferences, there's the content that's on stage, but a lot of those events people would say is the getting together and asking, you know, having coffee or a drink or whatever, lunch.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? There's like energize me, inspire me. So like, how do you like make sure that like, you know, by through this content, like some researcher who's not doing something will learn about something mm-hmm. and be like, oh my God, like I could be using that to solve this problem that I have. Which then surprises them, like they're very connected, you can see.
I also like how that example points out there's like a cultural, economic, temporal element to this. Like that worked really well in part because of the time mm-hmm. that you did it, and the needs that people had during that particular time were different or heightened or intensified by the pandemic. And so, you know, there's also this element of taking into account these external factors too, in thinking about like, what are people dealing with in their work, but also what external to work factors are impacting that too. So as we wrap up, I do want to make it kind of practical. So like one question that I saw people asking you a lot on LinkedIn or after they had read this article was like, how do we figure this out? Like you said in your article, people aren't waiting to be filled up with information by your content. Like they're showing up with a specific psychological state. How do we figure out what that state is? What's your process for thinking through that?
Mm-hmm. The process for thinking through that, give me a second. So you can do this by intuition if you know the audience well enough. Like if you are a freelancer who's being asked to write for a small business and you've never, ever, ever been around anybody that has ever tried to build and run and scale a small business, you're not going to be able to do this intuitively. So the backup to that then is to do the research. Mm-hmm. Back to the dovetail example, I interviewed like a dozen people or more before I figured out that that was what, you know, the needs. So it's like, you got to have the research and the good research protocol or interview guide that like helps you dig into why they need something. Why, instead of asking them how they feel, you have to like ask the right question of like, okay, well, if you don't get this done, then what happens? And then you get like them saying how the shit's going to hit the fan, they'll get mm-hmm. fired, all those things. And then you can infer the emotions from there. If you are stuck on a team that you don't have the ability to talk to those customers, you are lucky enough to be in an age where you can use AI to do that.
Okay.
You just have to, it's not a simple prompt. It's like you really need something. In fact, I would say you already have an article on Art of Content from Joe. that does something like this.
Yeah.
So make sure to link that in the show notes.
Definitely will.
But it's essentially taking your next step then is like, okay, I need to write a piece about XYZ or one topic. Instead of it being like, what is it? It's like, okay, someone who's coming to this piece, first, where is their product awareness? I use product awareness stages instead of funnel because top of funnel, bottom of funnel doesn't tell you anything about the mindset of the customer. And so someone who is product aware knows about your product. Someone who's solution aware knows that there are solutions to their problem. People who are problem aware are understand they have a problem but don't know what to do about it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got to think about where they are on that spectrum to then understand, okay, am I starting off with like 101 information or am I already in the weeds of like starting to talk about solutions and then talk about my solution as being the best? And each of those have a different job to be done. So someone who's at the problem aware stage, you need to let them feel like you understand their problem. What is their problem? How is their problem affecting them? What's at stake? What's the drama, the tension there? Kind of quote Tommy Walker, who talks a lot about this stuff.
Totally.
But yeah, like you need to think about that. And then when it comes into that state, you figure out, okay, it's back to the whole thinking about them as a protagonist, like imagining them literally on their phone, in front of a screen, wherever, reading this. And what's it going to take for them to feel this sense of this like physical sense of relief that they finally found the piece that's going to like help them? And I say that making sure you don't freaking overthink this because it's not, we're not curing cancer here, right? Like we're not trying to sell bestsellers. You got, it's about how many like hits at bat you have. And so you just need to like think through, okay, where are they? Like a protagonist, what is their motivation? What is their need? What is it they want? And then figure out that end state, where are they going to be? And making sure that you sort of like in the middle, take them on that journey and figure out what it needs to be.
Yeah, I love that. Not only is it like a much more human way to do content, it also is a much more effective way to do content because you're not trying to compete about being the encyclopedia or the HubSpot or the whatever of your industry topics. Instead, you're actually thinking about your audience, meeting them where they are, and helping them go on a journey that they're trying to go on. And in the process of doing that, you're actually becoming the trusted guide that then they can turn to when they're in that 5% category and they're ready to buy. Yeah, it just makes so much sense to me. Well, let's wrap up with a couple rapid-fire questions. My first one is, what is the most underused content job in B2B?
Represent me. So represent me means reflect the identity, values, and beliefs that the audience strongly resonates with. I think it is the most underused because most people who do content aren't incentivized to know that stuff.
Yeah. What is the number one most important job of B2B content, if there is one?
I mean, I do think maybe the same one.
The same one.
Yeah, because I think it's the most important because that's what's going to stick out. So I think by being able to represent their identity, values, beliefs, like being able to like truly understand the customer, all of the other ones get unlocked. Like, you can actually challenge assumptions. You can actually generate anticipation and enthusiasm. You can sort of be, you can truly be that trusted companion that guides them through their journey and helps them feel rest assured that what they're doing is the right, you know, the right path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. What's the last thing that inspired you in making B2B content?
I'm trying to think of something besides the art of content. And I'm not, I'm trying to, because like it, if I come out the bat saying that, it's going to sound
like I set you up. I bribed you.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I mean, that's it. Like, it's truly the last thing that made me, like, I quit reading marketing stuff. I mean, you know this, because like I never share stuff that isn't marketing with you. I always share stuff about psychology, media studies.
Yeah. What about something outside of the marketing world that inspired you in your work?
Doug Shapiro is a media like analyst, I guess is his title. I'd have to look it up. But he has this, the things that he is researching, studying, and writing about are everything that I have been reading and studying about since before I ever even considered myself a marketer. But yeah, he really helps you understand the economics of everything.
That's awesome. Last question is, what's one skill content marketers should be working on or building right now?
Taste. No, I'm joking. No, if you want to read why, I'm joking there. There's going to be a link in the show notes here to that discussion between you, me, you, and Brandon.
Yeah, it was a good one.
I think the skill that we need to be working on, I guess, is I believe everybody has the skills they need, the empathy, the storytelling, the craft. What I think, and this is going to sound on the surface just ridiculous, is like AI, is just getting better at it, because the oatmeal, link this for you so you can link it in the show notes later.
Sounds good.
But wrote a thing about AI that was like the best thing I've read about, yeah, it's evil if you're just going to like try and make AI slop. But the best use of AI is the admin stuff, the things that you don't want to do. So back to the whole like jobs to be done, research, like I use AI extensively for that stuff of, okay, so I need to do a, you know, take the Fresh Paint podcast, which is something that we put a lot of effort into. Our CEO is busy. He doesn't have time to prepare. So I meet with a guest for 15 minutes. I then triangulate all of the stuff that's online about them. And then I develop a interview guide, which has about 6 to 7 core questions with a 2 to 3 follow-up questions for each. And so that our CEO can jump into an interview, which we have one today, and be ready. Who's the guest? What's the story? And then the interview questions. I use that. I use AI to do that, not because I can't do it on my own, but because I can do it faster.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the skill to learn is to learn how to use AI to suss out and do these things, not to do the content and be the outcome or the output, but to help you do all of this stuff without getting dragged down. So you understand all of the emotional needs. If you have like tons of gong calls and you have an AI that's hooked into that, you can ask it, you know, of all the, you know, frustrations, what, like on an emotional chart, which emotions do you think are showing up in our sales calls the most often?
Yeah.
Like using AI to do all of these things helps you be better at creating content with range.
So good. Ronnie, thank you so much for coming on the show. I love this conversation. I hope that we can keep talking about it, people in content can keep talking about it, and that we can start making content with a little bit more range.
A boy can hope.